This episode is brought to you by Cars Commerce, one platform to simplify everything about buying and selling cars, and one partner to empower your business. Welcome to this special Disruptive Forces in Retail Automotive episode presented by the David Spisak Show and Disruptive Growth Solutions.
I don't know if any of you have ever watched one of those late night programs where somebody buys time on one of the off channels, and before they let the show roll, there's always that screen that comes up that says the views shared are not necessarily. So I'm just going to put this out there. I can't tell you whether these views are reflective of anything, but I can tell you I am joined by three extraordinary human beings and extraordinary members of the retail automotive community. So I want to welcome everybody to what I think is going to be an extraordinarily unpredictable. I'm going to start with Steve Greenfield, the founder and managing partner for Automotive Ventures. Steve, thank you for taking the time to join.
David, always a joy. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Cliff Banks. And Cliff is known for a number of reasons. He's been a legendary journalist in retail automotive for 30 years, formerly of Wards. And also you probably know him, many of you, because of his really fantastic report, the Banks report. And Cliff, thank you for joining.
Great to be here, David. Thank you.
And then, of course, we have the king of the flat bills, the king of the flat rim hats, the one and only Paul Daly. You know him from a SOTU, you know, brilliant, a SOTU, just getting dealers to really understand the power, you know, that we have in this industry and what they do for communities, what they do for people through Automotive State of the Union, starting with the pandemic. Thank you, pandemic. Thank you, Paul Daly. I'm super glad that you're here as well.
It's great to be here. I'll try not to embarrass my family.
Paul, you bring
so much energy to this industry. It's phenomenal.
It's
great having you part of it.
And I was going to ask Paul, if you wouldn't mind, not to the point of awkwardness, stand up, but not to the point of awkwardness. So we don't want to see anything below the equator, but just so people could see that t-shirt.
All right, hold on. We'll just lower the desk.
Oh, there you go.
There you go.
Romo.
So love people more than you love cars, right? And for anybody in this industry, and for people that maybe are watching that aren't even in the industry, but you know it, you love cars. You know, our country loves cars. It's a love affair. So if we love our cars that much, hey, let's throw a little extra love to the people around.
I have to give a shout out to Liza Borges, who this is her saying.
Yes.
And I first heard it come out of her mouth, and I said, that deserves to be on a shirt. And we're going to try to sell thousands of them and put it everywhere.
Good for you. Yeah, I love that. And Liza, just absolutely one of the premier dealers, premier leaders in the retail automotive industry. If you have not connected with Liza, I mean, you just have no idea how remarkably different that organization is put together. There's probably at least a half a dozen positions in that dealership that probably honestly don't exist in probably any other stores in the country, and she just thinks differently. And I want to start right there. You know, guys, it's a tendency of human beings, and this entire event is focused on EVs. And I have never seen anything so polarizing in my life. And by the way, just the great Glenn Mercer, who you may have seen earlier on this session, pointed out that the top 10 Democratic counties in the United States are responsible for 90% of EV sales. This is the first product that falls along political divide. Right? It's crazy, right? But it's polarizing. I was saying I could post something pro-EV and I'm going to get blasted. I could post something anti-EV, I'm going to get blasted, and even in between. So people think of things in terms of good or bad. And one of the things I love about Liza is no matter what happens, what comes up, in her organization, they don't say, hey, this is good or this is bad. They take the approach of think differently. And could you start off just by sharing with me, whether it's in the context of EVs or not, before we jump into a really fun discussion, what's the power and the importance in 2024, guys, of thinking differently? Paul, I'll start with you.
I think thinking differently is basically table stakes if you want to survive in 2024. there is no conventional thinking that exists anymore within the auto industry, in my opinion, because everything, and it could be a very simple thing, you know, like lot management, but the reality is every element of our business has changed since in the last 3 years. And if you aren't willing to think differently and approach differently, you're on your way to either being out of the business or selling, or you've given up, because if you're not willing to think differently, it's just straight table stakes to success in 2024.
And Steve, from your same question, but maybe also just another layer, we hear the word disruption as ad nauseum. Seems like the best organizations, the best companies, solution providers, you know, you've got a lot of phenomenal companies in your portfolio. For anybody that hasn't connected with Steve regarding his fund, his rather remarkable fund, please reach out to him to learn a little bit more about that. But isn't it basically a hallmark of every one of those solution providers and the best dealers in the country to not just think differently, but to have the mindset, I'm going to disrupt myself before anybody else disrupts me?
Yeah, one of the wonderful things about this industry is the fact that it moves at such a glacial pace, right? I look back at 25 years now in the industry and say, I'm amazed at how little has changed. But at the same time, I mean, David, I think you've used a quote even today, you know, it was, I think, Bill Gates who said that, you know, humans, because of adaptation and evolution, right? Humans, we tend to overestimate things in the short term, the effect of things in the short term, but underestimate in the long term. I think to Paul's point, right, there are some things shifting between our feet right now, under our feet, that we need to be paying attention to, because they're going to have long-term implications on how this industry evolves. And I'm sure we'll talk about a number of them today. But it's very interesting. I think human nature is to have this knee-jerk reaction and say, you know, don't move my cheese. Things aren't going to be as bad. Things are going to be a lot worse than we think. And it's really hard, I think, to kind of challenge yourself, especially in this industry where historically things have changed so slowly, to then say, but what does the horizon look like? What does the next 5 or 10 years look like, and prepare for it? And this is where, back to your question, David, where innovators really excel and differentiate, is that they have this innate ability to see something that others can't see, to anticipate, as you say, where the puck's going and get there ahead of it. And, you know, that really is the big differentiator for people who are successful in life, is they have the foresight to look around the curve, anticipate, and prepare for that future.
You know, that's I love that quote, that Wayne Gretzky quote, you know, when he was asked by a reporter one day, and he answered, you know, I don't skate to where the puck is, I skate to where it's going. Sounds so simple, but, you know, to your point, these innovators, these disruptors, and dealers like Liza are disruptors. They're also, to a degree, futurists, don't you think, Cliff?
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, Autovate, by the way, one of the things I love about Autovate, I tell people all the time, is it's literally the room where it happens, because you've got venture capitalists, you got investment banks, you got family funds, you got innovators, you got dealers, you got all these folks getting together in this very intimate, very unique environment that really shapes the future of the industry.
Yeah, I think, obviously capital, private equity drives a lot of that. I think, you know, and Steve's done a great job chronicling that with his book, his first book. I think the second book is at some point.
On its way. Coming
on its way. All right. Awesome. Looking forward to it. You know, so Steve's chronicled a lot of this disruption or these changes or what the industry may look like in the future. But you do have to become somewhat of a futurist, I think. But we are right now in the greatest period of uncertainty in our industry's history, because that, you know, the big question is the EV question that obviously this event has really focused on. But that's where I think it is all going to be, you know, the future of this industry is going to be determined in the next 3, 4, 5 years, probably, where it's going to go. And I think the consumer is going to have a big say in that. We do have a tendency to start chasing every shiny, you know, new object. I look back 10 years ago, I wrote a report on what the future of the automotive retail industry would look like. And half the stuff in there is a joke. I mean, I laugh. I cringe. I'm like, why did I waste my
time? I don't buy cars anymore. It's all robots.
Remember Jetson. the virtual test drives? I mean, that stuff just never panned out. And the pop-up stores. And you mentioned Glenn Mercer earlier, and Glenn, you know, shared a slide at Autovate that was pretty telling at the end of his presentation that said, you know, that listed several things that were from an Automotive News article in 1958. And I think all but one of the six you would look at and think they were headlines from today.
Yeah.
Including, you know, Chrysler test driving an autopilot. I mean, having an autopilot solution on its accelerator. I mean,
he shared a slide, you know, you may have seen in the presentation earlier. He was sharing something about Rolls and Royce having a discussion around 1913 about electrification.
Yeah.
How it would eliminate vibration, right? Smoother ride. We just got to come up with the infrastructure for the charging network. And he's, Glenn, he's equally funny as he is brilliant.
Yes. Yeah.
He said, you know, we're still not there, you know, to Steve's point, you know, as far as underestimating and overestimating.
It's 100 years later.
So let's use that as a jumping off point, you know, because it is an EV focused session, but let's branch out after that. But I'll start with this for any of you. What do you suspect might be the biggest story or one of the biggest stories that is EV related that we're going to see between now and the end of 2024?
I'll start.
Go.
So, yeah, we're already seeing this. I mean, you're seeing inventories back up, and that's going to get a lot worse over the course of the year, right? So people accuse me of being like negative EV, which I'm not at all. I think that there will be, you know, the genie's out of the bottle, and they'll always be going forward. An appetite to have, you know, electrification of drivetrains as an option for consumers here in the US. Will we get to 100% EV? No, we just won't ever get to 100% EV. I don't believe in America. I'll be long gone if that ever happens. But I think, David, we're already seeing a tale of two cities. As I've said before, you know, inventories for EVs are about twice as many days to sell already. This is non-Tesla inventory, legacy automakers. That's going to get worse over the course of the year. Many of the automakers have already committed to volumes, committed to new EV introductions, et cetera. And by the end of the year, we're going to see screaming deals on EVs, right? There's going to be like, dealers are going to be sitting there going, I'm not making any front-end gross on many of the EVs I'm selling. There's going to be like no motivation to sell these things. The OEMs are going to have to pile on a lot of dealer-facing incentives and consumer-facing incentives to move these things. And in some ways, it's going to be a very vicious cycle because consumers are going to look at this and say, why would I buy one of these things right now, except for the fact that they're being discounted? You're not creating value and brand prestige when you're selling things at a discount. And David, you and I have discussed this before. What's the motivation for a salesperson who's sitting at a dealership who has the option of selling an EV or selling an ICE vehicle, and their compensation is going to be dramatically different based on which one they sell? We know people, humans, if they do anything, they respond to incentives. Mm-hmm. And by the end of this year, I think it could get really ugly for some of the automakers in terms of the press that they're getting and just like EV retentions and residual values, et cetera. And not that I'm negative EV, but this is going to be a very messy year, I think, that's going to play out over the next 11 months.
You know, people have accused me of being negative towards EVs also, and I'm merely a pragmatic and hopelessly logical, and I'm not anti-EV. I'm anti anything that's going to lead down a path to where it's going to be cause adverse effects to the abilities for our dealers to be sustainably successful. You know, if you're a Rivian, for example, and you're losing $31,000 per vehicle, and if you think back to that old joke in the car business that we lose money on every car, but we'll make it up in volume, you know, at what point at $31,000 loss per car is there a happy ending? I don't get it. I don't see it. They take longer to sell. They cost more to carry. You spend more on advertising. And to your point, Steve, maybe the worst thing of all of this is that, are we simply moving towards an electrified version of pre-pandemic where we weren't selling cars, we were selling deals, we were selling payments? So that's a great one to start off with. How about you, Cliff or Paul?
I would say, like, whenever you have principles or like public perception driving the decisions that you're making, you're always leaving yourself vulnerable to the tail end of that. And I think we're seeing that play out right now, which is leading to the problems that Steve has pointed out. I'm even thinking about the Hertz thing right now. We're in 2021. The CEO of Hertz said, we're going to buy 100,000 Teslas and 75,000 Polestars. I actually don't know if they ever ended up buying any of the Polestars. right? Obviously, a production discrepancy. Tesla was able to make a bunch of the vehicles, but now they're liquidating the Tesla fleet, or most of it, because they're saying consumers don't really want to drive them, number one. Number two, they're very expensive to maintain and repair, which was the opposite of what everybody was promised. And so that is going to have a massive trickle-down effect, I think, just in people's psyche as well. Because now it says that even the Tesla Model 3, these companies are liquidating. I guess no one really wants to drive them. It was all hype, which just compounds the problem of needing to price them more aggressively. And then traditional manufacturers don't even have the advantage of the brand play that Tesla has made. And so they're introducing new vehicles for the first time or close to it, and trying to get people to try them with a sales force that's not motivated. Like, and then I'm thinking, like, the next tangential thought is, like, how about the brands that decided, like, we're going all electric? Like, they literally burnt the ships, right? You're looking at Volvo and Cadillac.
Big collective goal. Buick,
right?
In the
C-suite. Yes, Buick. They're saying, no, we're going all electric. I wouldn't be surprised if by the end of this year, some of this fallout brings maybe some hybrid technology back into some of those brands, so they can still save face and say it's an electrified engine. But yeah, so that's like what we're going to see at the end of 2024. I think Steve's prediction is going to have a lot of people rethinking how the PR department can kind of back into saying, actually, there's a battery in it, right? We're close. We're just not there yet.
Wow. It's a interesting thought, a really interesting thought that you serve up here, because frankly, based on things that are happening, like the Hertz announcement, it's reasonable to draw the conclusion that anybody that was thinking about an EV might have be given reason to for pause. And somebody who is not really leaning into EV, you just validated why they shouldn't have an EV.
Oh,
right?
Well, I would,
at the same time.
I think we've had some of these conversations earlier, even about the Hertz deal. And when I first saw that they were moving forward into this, my first thought was, what business traveler is going to rent an EV who doesn't already own an EV? I mean,
if it was a day trip, I would.
Maybe, but I don't want to spend my brain trying to figure out where the charging. I just have there's too many things going on. Now, and I'm someone that jumps in when I fly into Phoenix, I'm taking Waymo all the time. So I'm not anti-EV or anti-technology by any stretch. But I am anti anything that's going to make my life harder and create more for me to think about when I'm traveling, A. B, I think once he's made the move to start bringing in, renting them to Uber drivers and Lyft drivers, I just thought of the Scott Painter Fair experience when he purchased, all of Uber's lease exchange.
How'd that work out?
And went to, it was a disaster because the cost of the repair. It wasn't just EVs. It was all the vehicles. I saw the same play happening. And I think the Hertz thing is somewhat of a Tesla, more of a Tesla deal, maybe less than an EV issue right now.
You think, though, if they had a fleet of stars, right?
Yeah, no, you're true.
They're not getting fixed any faster.
No,
not any cheaper.
No.
Yeah.
One other thing to think about, too, is to your point, both of you. So Jimmy Douglas, who was on the used car session, great session with Brian Kramer and some other really terrific people. But one of the things that he took note of is his Plug platform, which is the first kind of EV focus, EV centric or EV exclusive rather portal where people can buy cars. Dealerships can buy cars. There's only in the roughly 21,000 EVs, used EVs for sale in the entire country. So think about this. Hertz had a fleet of 60,000 EVs.
Oh.
So they're going to cut a third of them. Isn't that 20,000? Doesn't that literally double the used car volume in one fell swoop? Something tells me that's not going to be beneficial to values.
Steve had a LinkedIn post this week just showing the pricing, didn't you?
That's pretty good. You can get good deals.
It's remarkable. $25,000 for a 2022 Model 3. It's more affordable than a conventional. It's like we're in the Freaky Friday. What is that thing called? Bizarro world.
After I saw your post, Steve, I was like,
Yeah, I know.
I was like, I think owning one just in driving it and like short, but they're all rear wheel drive. I live in Syracuse, so I'd like that kind of stopped me for a second. But I was think they're gonna get any cheaper, right? Like. Even I feel like between the 4,000 tax incentive money, and the fact that they're selling some of them as low as 17 or 18 grand, I'm like, you know, I don't think I might just do it. And then somebody commented, I could already smell the cigarette smoke and citrus cleaner. I was like, and that could have turned me all the way off. I was like, that's one of my least favorite smells in the world.
I like Cliff's thought about, you know, do I want to rent an EV when I'm on a work trip? Do I want to send that text? Not that, hey, I'm going to be 10 minutes late because of traffic, but I'm going to be 8 hours late because I need a charge.
Yeah.
See you tomorrow. Nice.
And Steve is someone who has rented EVs.
Yeah. I'm a regular Hertz guy. I've rented the Polestar. I've rented, you know, Teslas. But, you know, when I land in Philly and I have to go to Atlantic City, I look at the distance on my phone and I'm not charging. I don't even know how to charge. I mean, I go to a Tesla charge, I plug it in. And do I have to download the Tesla app? I don't know. The Cliff Point, they warn you. They say, look, if you don't bring it back full. Well, first, the awesome question is, you're leaving Philly Airport and they're like, are you going to fill up the car? I'm like, I don't know how.
Steve, no, have I been properly trained?
Yeah. But then they're like, well, it's going to be $35 if you don't fill up the car. I'm like, that's fine. Just, yeah. You know, whatever. So
was there any, when you turned the car back in, tell the truth, was there any gasoline drips underneath when you charge
it? I tried my best.
Yeah, that would have been.
All right. So let's jump off of EVs, you know, because I mean, there's so much there. Obviously we've got, The Chinese are coming. It's BYD. This is not an if, this is a when. And it's not just BYD. It could literally be 6 or 8 or 10 of these organizations are incredibly sophisticated. They're well-funded, you know, and they already have, you know, the solid-state battery everybody's waiting for. They have that. And they've got a car with 12 screens in it. They've got a car that's got a refrigerator in it, a minivan. They've got an SUV. They've got a high performance car. They've got a luxury car. So, I mean, they're, you know, what we haven't seen in this country from any of the brands is covering from $20,000 all the way up. And they have that. So, you know, that's something to talk about if you want to. But if you want to jump outside of EVs, what else fascinates you? What else do you think is likely to get some airplay and some conversation within the walls of dealerships? Because it's frankly going to be some type of a big story.
Outside of EVs?
Yeah.
Compliance? Well, I mean, we're gearing up to go to NADA in just, you know, under 3 weeks. We will, all of us be, and like tens of thousands of other people in the industry. Couple weeks, that's my life.
Yeah.
But, and I'm actually going to the public policy show on the 18th.
That sounds exciting.
Tomorrow. Yeah.
I'm going to tell Mike Stanton you said that. So we're going to cover this. And so that's all about policy legislators. It's a new venue for us. They might kick us out because of how we dress. But the bottom line is, I think last year it was back to basics was the thing we heard at NADA. I think this year is going to be so much about compliance, that the CARS rule. I've been in a number of dealerships since it passed, and there is still strangely this dichotomy of some people literally not even paying attention to it.
100%.
And I'm looking at their window stickers. I'm looking at how it matches up to the website. And you have these companies like Comply Auto and Mosaic. And they're like trying to like, how can we scream this louder that you're all in big trouble? And I'm seeing it like dead on. I think NADA is going to be like a lights on moment where everyone realizes how serious they need to get about it. So I think maybe, compliance.
Maybe. I think one of the obstacles here is it's almost like the boy that cried wolf, because we go back through history, we've always had these conversations about compliance or what the, you know, what the government's going to do or lawyers. I mean, we were writing about this stuff 20 years ago. Now it's at a whole new level, but I think we've been conditioned to think, oh, we've heard this before, we've heard similar stuff before, and nothing's really happened. Yeah, you have a couple one-offs, you know, Napleton getting burned, others. You know,
it's the consumer this time, though.
Yeah,
because sure, Reddit didn't exist. Right.
There's one other big difference, too, guys. Think about this. So during the Obama administration, there was massive authority that was granted to the CFPB that was never acted upon. And it was a year ago, March, what kind of precipitated this FTC compliance up-leveling was the CFPB a year ago, March, I believe it was, or April. And it was Chase Fraser who'd sent this to me initially. But they basically, the Biden administration's head of the CFPB basically said, hey, look at this toy. We never played with it before. We're going to jump all over this. And they have the right. this is such broad, they have such broad authority. If somebody, in order to crack open a door and to wreak a little bit of havoc in a dealership, all they need is one of those local news, you know, seven on your side investigations, a Google review, you know, or anything else that gives them the ability to pry open the door, pry open a filing cabinet and start peeking around. And I think that's something. And Paul, to your point, you know, I spend 150 plus days a year on the road in dealerships. And I've said this forever to anybody out there as a dealer with a jump drive. Give me a jump drive in 10 minutes. I could change your life because almost every one of your sales offices,
the front line.
Well, no, I'm just saying I don't need to. The computers on the showroom floor are not locked down. The sales managers, oftentimes the office or the tower, there's nobody up there. There's an F&I door that's unlocked. You know, and to your point, how many times can you handle a Napleton-like outcome? And I'm not just talking the 110 million. That's the quite the opposite of Powerball, but the reputational damage. You know,
well, it's in the fact that I'm just thinking straight up of the junk fees and the pricing being the same on the website, on the sticker, and in the front door. There are dealers, the good dealers who like, not the good dealers, the dealers who are paying attention to keeping everything, they're like out ahead of the rule. They're like, we're changing it before it's a rule. We're putting it out there. They're actually excited about the rule because they understand that,
right.
You know, some dealers' pricing scheme is, okay, we're going to put things here and then we're going to put things there. We're going to put everybody has a different strategy going into it and they all work, right? They've all worked for different dealers. But what happens now is that everything has to be up front and it's going to be very revealing to the consumer of what they're actually paying and for what, meaning that if they don't do it, right, the ones who don't have it all up front right now, when they don't do it, I think you're going to have other dealers turning them, right? And so I think, and you know
bounty hunters.
We've seen that.
We don't even need to wait for the consumers.
The dealers turn other dealers into their manufacturers.
Right, but now it's so facing, right? It's not inside the building.
Right.
It's on the internet and on the window sticker.
Right.
And so, you know, back to what's going to cause some disruptive forces this year. It's different. Like you said, CFPB, it's different. I don't think we've ever seen anything like
that. Different paradigm now.
To your point, Cliff, of 20 years ago, it's just... Yeah. There are just new pieces on the chessboard.
Right. But what I'm saying is that's why dealers haven't really been paying attention, why it's not a big topic of conversation that so many dealerships is because.
Oh, right.
I think we've been conditioned to think, oh, we've heard this. It's, you know, yeah, okay.
You know, isn't it interesting, guys, as we head into NADA in a couple of weeks, and it's going to be interesting because this visual manifestation of the mindset, you know, of dealers is that based on look at the booths where they're going to end up, is it more likely that there's going to be a huge crowd at some digital retailing booth, for example, or some marketing booth, or is it going to be at the compliance booth and the CPA booths, you know, four of us and with them? Something tells me that you're going to have no problem standing in line waiting for a drink if it's at some utilitarian kind of viewed solution like compliance or accounting versus, you know, this shiny object that is an above the line. Seems like there's so much focus spent on above the line solutions and interestingly, not nearly as much focused on below the line solutions. And yet the only thing anybody cares about at the end of each month is what shows up on the bottom line. So
it may just be the year of the pocket protector.
Steve, where do you think we go? What fascinates you? What do you think? Man, I think this could be a big story going forward in 2024 as it develops.
Well, I think one of the big stories is going to be the non-story about the agency model. You know, a year ago, think about this. A year ago, we had heard things like we just seen the Sony Honda car for the first time. And they said that, oh, we may actually use non-Honda stores to sell these things. You know, we were hearing about
Scout
disrupting the Volkswagen dealers. Oh, there's going to be a new Scout vehicle and we may sell it directly and not include the Volkswagen dealers. Like all that stuff's, I think, going to just get blown over this year. You know, we've seen literally within the last week, Fisker, who was going to sell directly, is looking for dealers to recruit. VinFast, coming from Vietnam, originally they were going to sell direct. They're recruiting dealers.
We'll see
more of this overall. And I think that the OEMs that during COVID fancy themselves smart because, oh, there's a new normal. where we can produce exactly match the production of cars to consumer demand and sell every car at MSRP, those days are already over.
Unbelievable.
They're going to get worse. And we're not going to hear anything about the agency models anymore. It's all going to be back around, hey, dealers, we really value you. You know, and you know what that really means is we love the fact that you're taking the inventory risk.
Yes, all of it.
Of course. But yeah, well, we knew this was going to happen. When this stuff started happening, we were having the conversation, are these OEMs smoking crack or what? I mean, these guys are not going to be able to maintain price discipline, number one. Number two, they're not going to be able to maintain.
They can't even control the prices.
And there's no way in God's earth that this agency model is going to fly. It's already not working in Europe.
Yeah, it's already struggling in Europe. And I said with Fisker, you know, you think about a couple that just has chronic relationship problems, and one of them says, well, why don't we have a baby? That'll fix it. Well, you know, to me, it's like Fisker saying, you know, well, why don't we put these cars that won't sell into dealerships? Certainly, they're looking for more cars that won't sell. I don't understand how that's going to fix that problem. I really don't.
Said it's going to be like when I'm always a big fan when people decide to partner up with dealers from finally they've understood that the entrepreneurial
capability
and the problem solving capability and the willingness, for better or worse, to take on that, assume the risk of the inventory, right? Hey, you can make profits by wholesaling vehicles, parent company. Doesn't that sound so great? But I love it because I think it'll be faster to flush out what people want and don't want. Right. And like the Fiskers, they'll find good partners, maybe in luxury segments, who want to offer the product and
want to sell an extra one car a month.
It's going to be the next Fiat showroom in your Chrysler dealership, right? Yes. Where we have somewhere to store like all of our accounting boxes, right? Because that's what every Fiat showroom has now. I've been in a lot of them, but VinFast coming in as well. It's, you see, like they built a factory, they had a dealer right next to it. Now, obviously, Leith was acquired by Holman. So they do have a network, but and thinking from the dealer perspective too, you're like, I'm putting my reputation on the line, especially if you're a group, by offering a new vehicle. So I don't know, but agency model all the way back to Steve's answer. I saw that in your predictions. And I was like, that was the first place time I actually thought about it. When you put it there, I'm like, that's already over.
We talked about it at Autovate in 22. We said not happening. And we will not be talking about this in 24.
Bam.
And you know,
is this year's agency model the Amazon Hyundai deal?
It's the new agency model.
Is that the agency model story of the year? The equivalent of the agency model last year, Steve, is the Hyundai Amazon, you know, that big announcement. Is that going to go the way of the agency model?
Who's going to deliver the car? Who's going to service it? Who's going to take care of the problem, right?
Yeah. People who bought a Sonata also bought.
I think quite the contrary. I think, you know, they will have challenges because it'll be clunky. The trade hasn't been contemplated. Non-captive financing hasn't been contemplated. How does F&I get negotiated? But I mean, if you're going to underestimate any company on the face of the earth, it's not going to be Amazon. By limited resources. Look, I would make this broad prediction. So 5 years from now, 30% of all new cars in America, those leads start on Amazon. Now, whether they get transacted in driveways, you know, some subsegment of those cars, but a third of all new cars in America, the leads are originating on Amazon.com. And when you sit and you say, well, if that guy isn't smoking crack, to use Cliff's language, then, I mean, there are big implications for a bunch of industry players.
Yes.
And including dealers to sit there. Well, if that was true,
yes,
I got to really rethink this thing.
So, now, Steve.
The lead gen generated and beginning on Amazon, that's, yes.
Legit. So let me ask you guys.
You know, like I like to recite. One is, you know, there are 200 million Amazon Prime subscribers. There aren't 200 million households in America. Pretty interesting, right?
Yeah, we have number two and three in mind.
Three in my house.
Right. But number two is, you think of the Amazon experience. It's very hard, if not impossible, to get on there and convince yourself you're getting the lowest price. That's on purpose. So we've all traded price transparency for convenience.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think we have transparency, though.
Well, price discovery then.
There you go.
Yeah, yeah. Okay? So Steve.
Just one other data point, just to kind of put in the back of your head, if you're going to discount Amazon here, is that, you know, as of a couple of years ago, more than 50% of all product searches, when we used to search for a product 5 years ago, we used to go to Google. More than 50%, close to 60% of all product searches in America originate on Amazon.com.
So true.
So yes. If you think we haven't conditioned the next generation of shoppers to shop for everything and prefer the Amazon channel, don't be delusional. Don't be delusional. And yeah, people are going to discount what I'm saying and say, yeah, but the average transaction price is $15. Sure it is. But ask younger generations what they want. And they want convenience. They want transparency. They want ease of use in everything in their life. And this is exactly the ethos of Amazon.
So I've got Jeff Bezos predicted that one day Amazon is going to fail. And this is very interesting to think about, you know, because of the size and the scale and the reach of this company, it's almost preposterous to think, you know, this is a company that could fail. But hold on, you know, it's interesting. We went from a Friendster to MySpace to Facebook. By the way, where's MySpace and where's Friendster? They're gone. We went from, you know,
hey, I Google. Still have a MySpace account.
Yeah, of course you do. But this is the same guy that has, three Amazon Prime accounts. Yeah. You may have an addiction to cardboard. Yeah. So, but think about this, guys. It's not that far-fetched. Google was the king of search, right? And the number one search engine, to Steve's point, is not Google. It's Amazon. But lo and behold, you know, 18 months ago, nobody ever heard of OpenAI and nor ChatGPT. This year, you know, disruption was the word of the day a few years ago, you know, and blockchain and crypto, and now it's AI. Everything is, you guys mentioned earlier, Steve, probably in many respects overhyped, but is it possible that's somehow, some way going to find itself into the search equation and what happens there? The other point that I will make is, guys, with that bold prediction that Steve just made, and you heard it here first, or maybe second, might have been second, but let's not quarrel. Let's not get into the weeds. But is it possible, guys, that also within 5 years that we will see a dealer group sell to Amazon? In other words, a la Whole Foods as a distribution center.
Been talking about that for years.
Right.
Right. Because, I mean, Carvana, Amazon romance made a lot of sense a couple of years ago. My thought is, unless they really want to get into and have, like Whole Foods, boots on the ground, but the car business is just a much more complicated machine to run. And from the outside, an analyst will look at it and say, what could be so hard about it? And then it's a strangely complex machine. Mm-hmm. That's all I can say from being on the inside. Strangely complex, much different than a grocery store.
Yes. I mean, Microsoft obviously tried to break in. That didn't go so well. Salesforce has been trying to break in. They're not making any big headway. So I totally agree with you. All right. So here's a question that was served up by you, Cliff, back in Autovate. And are we likely to potentially see any kind of shakeup or turnover at the top of any of the major manufacturers between now and the end of this year?
Well, I think, yeah, Steve knows my answer there. We've had a few dinners, I think, over the last year where I've made some...
What is it? I haven't heard.
Bold projections. On the leadership. When you read the tea leaves, all of a sudden in the last couple of weeks, there's been a lot of commentary in the media and others regarding Mary Barra and whether she survives the year. And I say survive, that's probably the wrong term. I don't think she gets pushed out, but I do think that with her age at 62, and it certainly appears that the EV strategy is not working, are going as fast as they would have liked. You know, she's seeing several more years ahead of her, I think, of some, a lot of pain and frustration on that end. If the consumer does not play ball with the EV strategies, you know, the Cruise deal, that was a bad deal, in my opinion. I mean, it was a cash incinerator and pure stubbornness.
Frankly, the
but
doesn't.
So listen, I think for me, I could see a world. I'm a big fan of hers. I think But I could see a world in which she would leave before it all, you know, hits the fan here in the next year or two. And I think, you know, she could go out relatively on top still. And, you know.
But they're going to replace her.
Write her ticket. Oh, that's, who knows?
Nick Saban?
Well, guys, with BYD coming in 2025, I mean, let's be reasonable.
Yeah.
You know, isn't she at the top? I mean, quite possibly at the pinnacle today. And it's highly likely that there's only downside going forward. Yeah, whether it's EV investment, you look at BYD, which is probably going to have a significant negative impact on sales for Ford and GM and others. Is that quite possibly going to play into this?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's where, you know, I mean, she has responded to some of those questions by talking about her energy and her excitement and continued excitement. But listen, she's been there for a long time, 10 years. It is interesting. When she first came on, I had actually predicted that she was going to end up being the next president of GM. And I had a conversation with a dealer here in town in Detroit, and they thought it was going to be someone else. And we were arguing about it. And I said, this was in December. And I said, she'll be named president before the end of the year. And she was. And then I was on the radio with one of the other business journalists here in town. And he took me to task because I made the comment that, listen, Mary Barra could easily go down as one of the great all-time CEOs of GM, or, you know, leaders, you know. And he was, Cliff, it's too early to even think about that. He was poo-pooing. But, you know, you look at her place in history. I mean, she's had a tough, people aren't, I mean, it's been a tough road. Two plays by activist investors. You've had a pandemic. You know, she came in with an ignition, faulty ignition play. You know, I don't know of anyone that, I mean, I don't know that anyone could have done it much better. But I do think the Cruz deal was misguided.
What about Farley?
Yeah, Farley is, he's another one I think's on a much shorter leash than people realize. And I just think it's because of the dealers, too.
I don't think he has a lot of fans at this point within the
dealer network, does he? But he didn't before either. I mean, when he was at Toyota, Lexus, I mean, he's a brilliant guy. And I think fascinating individual and brilliant. You know, once you get sideways with your dealers, the handwriting's on the wall to historically, right?
So, guys, why don't we jump over? There's another interesting news story this week, and that is Asbury making the announcement that they're going to move over to Tekion from CDK. Does this, just like we're talking about the potential for a BYD, is likely going to cause a very adverse impacts for the traditional manufacturers that are getting into the EVs more and more, the United States-based organizations. What does this mean for CDK, Reynolds, and other DMS providers that, you know, in the beginning, you had mentioned that quote earlier, Steve, and you know, one of my favorite quotes is from Scott Galloway, the professor of marketing at NYU, where he says, it's amazing how long things take and shocking how quickly they happen. And this is probably a good application for it, because here's a company that starts out, you know, they buy a Chevy store, a Hyundai store in California to lab their solutions. They validate them. They start putting them out there in small organizations. But next thing you know, you turn around and in the last couple of years, they're in the largest dealership in the world, Longo. They're in some of the best dealership groups, Bergstrom, Germain, and others. And they just signed the largest group in the UK, and now their first publicly traded group. So this is quite a leap in a relatively short amount of time. And of course, you know, they're rolling out a very significant number of new dealers every month, and now can boast over 1,000 dealers, which has gone up tremendously in just 2 years. What does this mean, in your opinion, within the entire DMS landscape or that ecosystem?
Cliff.
Yeah.
I guess the question, Cliff, is this going to become a big story in 2024?
No, I've been tracking the DMS players for 25 years or so. Know the management teams. Well,
is everybody?
I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's
Cliff needs to get out more.
Yeah, I do. I tell you. No, listen, this is a big development. Tekion has to execute on the Asbury deal. I think that's their line in the sand, I think. Let's
So let's say they execute what happened.
Pull that off. Okay. Yeah. And granted, I mean, we're living in a world today where I think this could be the next era of technology. We've had the last 15, almost 20 years where the five of the six publicly traded groups have been on CDK. Penske's on Reynolds. And then Reynolds has nine of the
top 10
private groups. But Lithia's recent announcement, you know, buying
Pinewood,
buying the group in the UK to get their hands on the Pinewood DMS. Clearly, they're frustrated. I think Asbury is frustrated with the current state of events. And some of this is driven, it's not necessarily because CDK or Reynolds are bad companies at all. I know the management teams there, and I think they're phenomenal. Is ownership structure, certainly at CDK, having an activist investor play a couple of years ago, they're still dealing with that fallout or with the just the long-term implications of how that played out. You know, Reynolds is got a new look, new perspective on life. It's a bulletproof DMS. They've got a great management team. CDK and Reynolds aren't going to take this stuff laying down, but Tekion is certainly...
pretty hard to replace 300 dealerships at Lithia and 100 plus at Asbury.
Well, you can't. Yeah.
How long does that take?
Yeah. It's going to take time, right?
Yeah.
But in 2007, Asbury made a decision to go with DealerTrack at the time. And it took 3 years for that decision to play out to where they finally backed away. DealerTrack couldn't meet, and this is from a very high level, so I'm not going to get into Weecher, but they couldn't meet the obligations or requirements required of Steve. I mean, a year prior. I mean, watching this play out too. I mean, this is before the Cox acquisition, but DealerTrack could not meet the requirements necessary for a public traded company in their reporting that the requirements that the SEC has and FTC. So that was a huge blow to DealerTrack. And at the time, Asbury then went to CDK, as did, you know, four of the others. Do we see in 5 years a big upending of some of this? Tekion will be, I think, with the other two, it'll be part of the big three.
Don't you think it's really fair to say, I mean, that you wake up 3 to 5 years from now and just, you know, you look at the big three 20 years ago, you know, with essentially Chrysler, GM, and Ford, and today it's Ford, GM, and Toyota. Isn't it quite likely that the big three are not going to include DealerTrack when you look out 3 to 5 years, but rather Tekion is going to be very well have a big foothold by that time. Isn't that a pretty fair assertion?
Yeah. If they execute on the Asbury deal, yes, then I think it's, you know, the runway is strong for them. If they don't execute on the Asbury deal, then, you know, it may be relegated to the, you know, to the trash heap at some point. I don't know. I mean, they're bringing a lot of energy and a lot of innovation to the space.
They really are. And Cliff, I'm going to have to ask you to temper yourself a little bit between the crack smokers and the dumpster fires. This is a family show, Cliff. So listen,
we've got ham sensitivity training before the session.
So we've got 10 minutes left. Let's jump into perhaps another.
Let me jump on one.
Yeah, I want to hear what CK
on Tekion here. So, you know, I like this quote, since we're using quotes today. There's a interesting William Gibson who says the future's already here, it's just not evenly distributed, right? So, yeah. look at the press release last Friday, which was interesting. It's not lost on me. There's really only one reason that a company hires a CFO with public experience.
Oh, sure. Yes.
And it's taking companies public from private to public. So there was an announcement last week in Automotive News that Tekion just hired a new CFO, and he's got, you know, experience taking companies public. So clearly signaling what the next sort of like 12 to 18 months. By my rough math, they're probably almost through the capital that they raised this last time where they had this huge valuation. They've just signaled to the market that, you know, maybe the IPO path will be the next step. I mean, the IPO markets are effectively closed, but we've heard that they should be opening up the second half of the year.
Right.
Could be good timing to start to entertain on the back of this Asbury announcement. Got some tailwinds. Maybe an IPO is something they might consider.
Well, see the connected vehicle or software defined vehicle play, you know, getting more intense with the OEMs. I think a Tekion or someone along those lines, even Arouse or CDK, can become very attractive targets for some of the bigger players outside of automotive. I mean, we wrote that 20 years ago too, but I think this changes. I mean, the connected vehicle platforms change what that future may look like here too. But certainly the IPO is the next step for Tekion.
You know, since you mentioned that, you know, it's really reading the tea leaves, obviously,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Connecting the dots. And if you want to go another way, I mean, obviously the power and the importance, frankly, at all three levels, at tier one, tier two, and tier three, of having a fully integrated environment, mobile forward, cloud-based, you know, wasn't on the radar 20 years ago, wasn't important 10 years ago, seems vital and critical today. And how do you move forward as, you know, you think about this as a dealer, as a manufacturer, as a public, and you say, well, how do I meet these changing demands and expectations for clients and move forward fundamentally into the future if I don't have a fully integrated platform? And by the way, the manufacturers clearly understand what's at stake. And you've got, obviously, I think it was Acura that made a decision to use Tekion as the DR solution. You have other OEMs looking at it from a DMS proposition. And, you know, eliminating those silos between tier one, tier two, tier three.
Yeah,
what if I could go online like Tesla and I could go to Ford, I could go to Mercedes, I could go to Honda, and I can start looking at a car, select it, order it, and seamlessly it's going to take me all the way through to my local dealer, instead of having three distinctly different experiences that are disparate, right? So, I mean, I think it's a very interesting play. As we wrap up, I just wanted to jump into one other thing that's probably going to be bandied about and talked about and going to have more wagers and more interest than anything else, and that is the Super Bowl. Gentlemen, you know, we have NADA, too big of it. We got NADA coming up in just a scant 2 weeks, and then we've got the Super Bowl right
in
after that.
In the same town.
Right, in the very same location. That's right. So I believe that we have two hardcore Philadelphia Eagles fans, as well as a hardcore Toronto Argonaut fan, which means this is our objective observer right here. He has not adopted the Falcons, much to the chagrin yet of that ownership. And I'm a hardcore 49er fan my entire life. So it just so happens we've got a couple of these teams in the Super Bowl. And listen, this is for you and Cliff. Paul, you and Cliff, you don't have to be a homer. You don't have to be a homer. Do the right thing. I want to know, what say you, Paul Daly? What do you see in these playoffs? We're starting off with a wild card. A weekend just happened, super wild card weekend. But as we go towards the Super Bowl,
yep,
who are going to be the last two teams standing?
All right. It's easy to be a homer on this one because I do not expect the Eagles to be in the Super Bowl, which is the best place to be as an Eagles fan, right? No expectation. I was upset last year when we was like, every analyst is, I see the Eagles winning. I was like, we're toast. There's no way.
Yeah,
don't do that to us.
Yes.
And so I think we could see 49ers Bills in the Super Bowl.
Interesting.
I think the Bills remind me a lot of the Eagles, right? Like, they have the capability to be electric and win, and then for
Bills
and all, they just fall apart. But I'm feeling like I live in Syracuse, New York now. I'm feeling the Bills energy. And I think Bills 49ers could be a really interesting Super Bowl. Although, I know what Cliff is probably going to say. And
I don't know. What am I going to say, Paul?
From the Eagles side, you're going to say the same thing that I said.
No, I don't see the Eagles. Just the last several games have been a disaster for them. And I think the locker room's a mess right now.
So who's the last two teams standing in your mind?
The last two teams standing.
With your journalistic expertise.
Yeah, I'm looking at the Ravens.
Mm-hmm.
And probably the 49ers.
Yeah, I would have to think, and I'm not being a homer either, but I'd have to think, if you just look at the two best teams on paper, the two most balanced teams, special teams, offense, defense, it's pretty clear there is no comparison. The 49ers just demolished the Eagles. They demolished the Cowboys. I think unless they pull a Josh Allen themselves collectively as a team, the only team that could beat the 49ers is the 49ers. And I agree with you. The Bills are a frightening team because, honestly, when Josh Allen does not turn over the ball, if he doesn't fumble and he doesn't throw silly interceptions like he did last week, they are very difficult to beat. And I would probably pick them over the Ravens if they played a mistake-free game. I think that's what it's going to come down to. And if I have to choose between any of those winning the Super Bowl, I don't know why, I'm going to go Niners. I'm going to go Niners.
He goes somewhere. He goes the Homer route.
I mean, I got to go the Homer route. I got to.
It's fair.
That's fair. I mean, watch out for the Detroit Lions.
Great Super Bowl. By the way, when the Eagles beat the Patriots, that was one of the most legendary Super Bowl. I mean, spectacular Super Bowl.
One of the most legendary
on memory. By the way,
this close to crying.
So speaking of crying.
And I did not move. at all. And I didn't move. My sons thought I'd be a lot more excited. I just breathed a sigh of relief when it was over.
I watched an 80-year-old man yelling into his cell phone because when they made it to the Super Bowl, I told my kids, I was like, we're going down to the city and we're going to watch it with friends, like with a bunch of other Eagles fans. Yeah. So you go down there and I'm watching my friend's 80-year-old father bent over yelling into a cell phone at his other son. We did it! Just, like, eyes closed, bent over, phone all the way out here, and
I love
the
that.
Memory that's in my head.
Well, you know, I'm here in Michigan, and we just experienced some of that here in Michigan.
I can't wait. Yeah, I'm excited for the Lions. I'm excited for the town. I'm excited for the Lions. Yeah.
So I remember, Cliff, we just jumped in the Wayback Machine. You were saying something before we started rolling here on this session about way back in the 1980, 1983 seasons. I recall Dick Vermeil, wasn't he a bit of a crier?
He was, absolutely.
Yeah, talking about sensitivity training, I believe Dick Vermeil was ahead of his time because that guy could weep for no tomorrow. Nothing against that, ladies and gentlemen. Good to have that sensitivity. Don't write any terrible posts about me. I actually like the sensitivity and you could show your feelings. I think that's great. I just thought it was interesting. He was really the only NFL coach I've ever seen openly weeping on a repeated basis.
Obviously, I have problems with...
I know many Eagles fans that have repeatedly wept, but I've never seen a coach repeatedly weep.
No balls, boom. I don't cry.
All right, so final parting shot, Steve Greenfield. What are you most looking forward to? We've been talking about some big stories. What are you most excited about as you get into NADA?
You know, I think it's going to be a great idea. I have hope that we're going to be able to look at process automation. I won't even use the word AI. Process automation that helps dealers save money. To your point, David, takes out costs, means more profitability for dealers overall. You know, in the past, I haven't seen a lot of these companies. I continue to have hope that we're going to see a lot of companies focusing on not helping dealers generate more revenue, but taking out costs aggressively. And I want to invest in those companies.
I love that. War Cloud, by the way, spectacular.
Yes.
What a spectacular company. Jim Roach, hats off to you. Cliff Banks, what say you? What are you looking forward to most when you as you go to NADA?
Yeah, that's a great question, David.
All right, let's pass.
Paul. Getting through it, yes. Yeah.
By the way, Cliff, you may actually see actual crack smokers in Vegas, by the way. Nobody in the car business, but you may see that. Somewhere on the streets of Las Vegas. All right. What are you looking forward to, Cliff?
Just seeing everyone again. You know, it's, you know,
I agree.
Been around for a long time. It's great to see the relationships. I think story-wise, you know, I think from an M&A perspective, going into the second half of the year, it'll be interesting to see what kind of deals, transactions are on the table on the tech side.
Great. I love that. And I love the relationships are great. Paul, how about yourself? Yep.
I think the one thing that doesn't get talked about enough, and we're talking about disruptive forces and EVs, and I'm surprised we only literally AI was only said one time on this call, and I thought we were going to get off with Session saying it, and now it's been said twice. But with all that talk, I think the industry has made massive progress in the last several years, becoming much more human-centric, both on a consumer side and on a team employee side. And so I'm always excited to go to NADA to, you know, be face-to-face, eyeball-to-eyeball with so many people in our community who are focusing on the human elements, who are focusing on making it a better industry to work in, making it a more fun way to transact and buy a car. And so I'm always excited to find those like-minded, like-hearted people because those connections that happen usually turn into very sound relationships and a lot of positive operational change down the line. So, you know.
Paul, we need that focus. We need that. We need you to keep doing that because... It's such a, in the media, obviously mainstream media, we get such a bad reputation and, you know, it's sad. I mean, just from the perspective of the dealers are the reasons more EVs aren't being sold to, you know, obviously the consumer experience. So being able, having someone like you shining the light on the folks that are doing it right
Yeah, it takes everybody. That's huge. I mean, what it's that's huge. What keep the technology, yeah. The innovation, the sales models, it should all in the end, right? Like translate right. and equate to a higher level of human flourishing.
Right.
Right. That's what we all are trying to do. So
isn't that I love that, Paul, and I look forward to seeing you look Cliff and Steve. And I echo what you're saying. The ultimate IP, you know, is our culture and our people. Our right. obsession. People talk about obsession for your customers, but the great companies out there. I mean, we spoke about Liza earlier and, you know, her moving people forward doesn't just mean selling cars. It's also developing people within the organization. So, you know, just having that obsession with our customers, but also that equal obsession with our associates, our obsession with developing them, our obsession with connecting to the human side. And that's what where you guys, I think, are like no other at Esotu, is allowing people to really focus and learn the power of that, the human element within our business. It yeah. is what our businesses are built on. And it's what we hope to do, is to positively change people's lives, whether it's selling them a car, supporting our communities, whether it's a nonprofit, or allowing somebody who doesn't even have a college degree or a high school degree to come into this one of a kind industry and transform their lives. So I look forward to seeing you all. I wanted to thank you. I knew this would be fun. It far exceeded my expectations, even. It was nothing but a bucket of fun. I want to thank everybody for taking the time to watch this session. I want to please not just invite you, but recommend that you connect with all three of these gentlemen, because Steve Greenfield, not once but twice, well, weekly with his newsletter, incredibly informative and insightful, and monthly with his one of a kind report mm-hmm. that keeps us up to date. We've got the Banks Report, Cliff Banks, and Autovate. Everything that you're doing with Autovate, with your podcast, as well as the Banks Report, keeps getting better and better. And we thank you for your contribution.
And let me interrupt you real quick. If you haven't bought Steve's book, go to Amazon, buy it, and then buy the second one.
That's pre-order. Cool. Yeah, you need to
grab pre-order. Yes, yes.
Right there. I never have it. I have a copy within arm's reach.
There you go.
On all stand desk.
I'll tell you what, Steve, just in honor of your bold five-year prediction, I'm going to say this. If anybody wants, you can reach out to me personally on LinkedIn. I will buy you Steve's book.
As well as his
new book. If you're watching this and you want it, and you want to stay on top of things, hit me up. And Paul,
thank
you for all that you do. Please connect everybody with Paul and Kyle, and thank them for the great contributions they make in our industry with Esotu. Looking forward to, by the way, your big event in May, isn't it?
Yes.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. So looking forward to that great event and more to come. So thank you for joining, and wishing everybody the very best for a spectacular 2024.
See you later.